on Bachelor with Gordon Chang, my colleague and co-host, and we turn to nuclear weapons. Nuclear weapons are the conversation of the 20th century between the U.S. and the Soviet Union that no longer exists. Now the People's Republic of China presents nuclear weapons and a conversation that has not started to my knowledge. However, we read in the South China Morning Post in these last hours, U.S. must adapt its nuclear arms control policies to get China on board, goes the assertion. We turn to Peter Husey, our colleague of these nuclear weapons matters from the 20th century and now into the 21st. Peter is president of Geostrategic Analysis. He's a fellow at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. Peter, China has nuclear weapons, both strategic and, we believe, tactical. The nuclear weapons that are most concerning are the empty or filled silos in the northeast of China, building quickly, some worth what we're told are MIRV'd warheads, multiple strikes. The U.S. has recently issued its 2022 Nuclear Posture Review programmatic findings, which remain in place here a year later. The mix of the U.S.'s ambitions to upgrade or, for example, to replace the Minuteman III with the Sentinel, all of that is in train. Does China want that to turn off? What are they talking about when they say we have to adapt? Good evening to you, Peter.
Good evening, John. I was fascinated by the article. There are about seven major arguments she makes. She said that our projected increase in warheads that the Posture Commission has recommended, though they don't have a number, pushed China to decide to upgrade and expand their nuclear weapons. However, they decided to expand their nuclear weapons decades ago, probably over 10 years ago, because it takes a long time to build the ICBMs and the submarines and the bombers. So that's a false argument on their part. The other argument she says is, well, the U.S. has to come down. We've come down 90% since 1991. The Chinese are now going to go up 400%. Okay? So it's kind of interesting that she claims that we're the bad guys. And she makes an interesting argument. She says, we target their leadership, their security forces, and their weapons. And that's bad because that makes China build more weapons. But that's not true. Their forces are survivable at sea. The bombers can get off on strip alert. And they have mobile ICBMs that are rail mobile. So they have a pretty survivable force. What our targeting says is, if you attack us, we'll take out your remaining forces and you will not be able to sustain your aggression or your hegemonic objectives. That's really, really important. Blowing up cities, John, I've never understood why people think that's what we do, because cities don't attack us. If you're only going to attack the cities, their missiles and their bombers and their subs remain in sanctuary from which to attack us. So those three arguments she started up front, and they're all wrong, which is kind of interesting. And then she says, adopt a no first use policy. But China told Japan if they came to the defense of Taiwan, they would nuke Japan and you would surrender just as you did in World War II. Just kind of pretty harsh rhetoric on the part of China. So they don't want us. They then also said in this article, which is very interesting, she said if the United States wants to talk arms control with China, they have to reduce their nuclear weapons below where they are now. Well, they're somewhere between 1,300 and 1,800, and any significant reduction would put us below China, projected for 2035. So, John, that would be my initial response to your good question, that the young lady who wrote the article for the China Morning Post has basically on those four points got it completely wrong.
Peter's addressing Asmad Khalid, who is identified, according to the South China Morning Post, as an independent researcher, former visiting fellow at the Stimson Center. Areas of interest include nuclear politics. Gordon, you have a question for Peter.
Peter, why does the U.S. arms control community always blame the U.S. for everything that happens in the world?
Well, Gordon, if you want to change China or Russia policy, good luck. It's tough. Ronald Reagan showed that. It takes a real concerted effort to change policy. But if all you need to do is replace the president, or the senators or the congressmen, and you change U.S. policy, and that's the trigger for everything happening that you want to have happen, well, then you go after the United States. If you blame the United States, then you're saying correct U.S. policy and everything gets well. Okay? But if the problem isn't us, but North Korea, Iran, Russia, or China, that's a horse of a different color. To try to get them to change their policy, as you both know very well, that's very tough to do because you have to have a coercive capability. You have to do it militarily, politically, economically, and across the board, which is, I go back to President Reagan. His was a whole of government approach. And as you know, for the last 40 years, since the end of the Cold War, up until just about 2010, we basically didn't think nuclear weapons modernization was important. And now finally we have, but we're doing everything simultaneously. We're doing everything at once, and we have no room for margin of error. And it's costly to maintain what we have, and they have to be replaced by the new stuff starting around 2030. So if you want to argue that the change in U.S. policy solves the problem, then you have to criticize the United States. That's kind of an axiom of the entire community and the arms controllers, because they rarely hold Russia or China to account.
I want to go through quickly the recommendations for the nuclear arsenal made in 2022 by the Biden administration.
Yes.
Quickly, is there any intention right now to limit the replacement of the Minuteman III by the Sentinel? Do we have a full commitment to the Sentinel, or are they hesitating? Yes or no, Peter?
I would say yes, we have a full commitment.
All right.
And for the bombers and the submarines.
No, I want to go to the submarine.
And National Nuclear Command and Control.
I want to go to the submarine next. We are fully funding the Columbia class. Is that a yes or a no?
It's a yes.
And are we modernizing the B-52H? And are we replacing the gravity bombs with a long-range standoff weapon, a cruise missile?
Yes and yes. So we're upgrading the B-52 and building the new radar, R-A-I-D-E-R, radar bomber, which is the B-21. And the first flight was just the other day.
To your knowledge, Peter, is China matching any of these programs?
Yes. They have more ICBMs than we do. They have about half the number of submarines. And they have a third largest air force in the world.
Gordon, you have a question for Peter.
Peter, there have been reports that the Sentinel program, which is to replace the Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missiles, land-based, is having problems and is going to be well behind schedule. Is that true?
Well, the current report from the Air Force and Dr. Kendall is that there may be a 6 to 9 month slip. But the key issue is we don't know what we're going to find when we open up all these silos. We have 400 distinct silos, and they have various problems in terms of cracking concrete or water or whatever. And you don't know whether they'll all be basically the same.
Peter, the U.S. responsibility is not only to protect the territory and people of the United States, but to offer the same nuclear weapons umbrella to our allies, chiefly NATO, but around the world, China, Japan, I'm thinking of, the Philippines, Australia. They're not nuclear weapons arsenals because we guarantee that we will stay up to date and ahead of our adversaries. China has no comparable responsibility whatsoever. That has to be part of the negotiation here about numbers and quality. Is it your reading that will be part of the conversation? Because arms control is a good idea. We have a minute or so, Peter.
I would say it's absolutely essential the U.S. keep its extended deterrent. And I don't. Every administration I could even hypothetically think of in the future will maintain that extended deterrent. China, by the way, has asked us to take it away, to leave countries naked in the Western Pacific. But the United States says there's no way we would undo that. So that's a critical point you make. I think it's 30 countries in NATO and kind of at least half that number in the Western Pacific. So, and China has no nuclear umbrella over anybody. Their one ally, North Korea, has nuclear weapons, and their ally, Russia, has nuclear weapons. And the other country, Iran, may have nuclear weapons. So you're exactly right.
And to your knowledge, is Russia participating in this theoretical arms control doctrine that we'll all develop? Is North Korea participating? Is Tehran participating? Have you heard any remarks like that, Peter? 30 seconds.
No. Russia is the only country that has sat down with us and said they're willing to talk to us about arms control, but only if we stop aiding Ukraine, which is kind of a non-starter.
I see. It's conditional. Peter Husey is the president of Geostrategic Analysis. He's a fellow at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. Gordon, your thoughts here in the final 30 seconds. This criticism by the People's Republic of China, is it noise or are they genuinely this naive to think that we'll negotiate with only one part of the threat?
John, the word that comes to mind to answer that question would be cynical. The Chinese will try it on and they'll just hope that they can convince somebody in Washington to accept their positions. But as Peter said, no, we're not going to do that.
Gordon Chang, I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.